Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome to 21, where we're recording on April Fool's Day. Many are consumed with March Madness as we look towards the Final Four this weekend. But for Yvonne and I, we focused on celebrating Women's History Month. We hosted a few International Women's Day panels featuring some of the most inspiring women out there as we do our part to highlight diversity and inclusion. It's only fitting that we close out the month by bringing on a global HR and a diversity, equity, and inclusion executive, former Nike, Just Do It, Vice President of Global Diversity and Inclusion. The former Michigan Wolverine has featured in New York Times Magazine, Black Enterprise, and has been named the Network Journal's 25 Most Influential Black Women in Business. We welcome Tamika Curry Smith. Hola, Tamika. ¿Cómo estás? Welcome to 21.
Hola, está bien, and I'm not a former Wolverine. I will always be a Wolverine.
I knew you were going to have something to say, Tamika, about that. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And of course, what I didn't mention at the top, she speaks a little French, speaks a little Spanish as well. So well-rounded she is. Well, before we get into your story, you down for an icebreaker?
I am. Let's do it.
All right. So a game which we call 21 questions with 21. So no warm up, no stretch, just straight into it. Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Neither, because I don't eat beef.
Whataburger doesn't have a non-beef version. You know,
I don't know. I guess the story is I don't frequent burger joints. So sorry, I have to pass on that one.
Well, I don't think you're going to pass on this one. Beer okay. or tequila?
Oh, tequila without a doubt. I can't stand beer.
A little tequila with a salad. I like that. Beach or mountains?
Beach, beach, beach. The beach feeds my soul. I am without a doubt a huge fan of the beach. I would say almost every vacation I have, I try to find a beach.
Twitter or Instagram?
It would be Instagram, although I'm a bit old school with social media. I'm not on it a ton, but I would say I more stalk Instagram, but I don't post much.
Tupac or Biggie?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to say Biggie on that one.
Jordan or LeBron?
I'm going to say LeBron. I think because they both obviously are amazing athletes, but I truly appreciate LeBron leaning into social justice issues. I think Jordan is starting to do that more, but at this point in his career, he wasn't as much. And so I appreciate LeBron taking that quote unquote risk to do that.
Well said. You can skip this next question, but we'll ask it anyway. Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
So my family's from New Orleans, so I'm going with Popeyes, even though I live in Georgia now, but Popeyes, absolutely.
Las Vegas or Miami?
Miami Beach. We just talked about the beach.
Nice. Action or rom-com?
Action. Love action movies.
IHOP or Waffle House?
Ooh, wow. I don't frequent either one of them, but I would have to say partially because of my son. He'll eat it. IHOP. He's not a huge fan of Waffle House, so I'll have to go with IHOP on that one.
East Coast or West Coast?
I would have to go with East Coast.
Early bird or night owl?
I think my body would naturally wake up at probably about 9 o'clock on its own. So definitely not an early bird.
Car or a truck?
Car.
Netflix or Hulu?
I probably watch Hulu more than Netflix. I have Hulu Live. And so my son and I watch a ton of stuff on there.
Sprite or Dr. Pepper?
Sprite, if I had to choose, but I actually don't drink pop.
I think I know the answer to this one. Summer or winter?
Summer, duh, the beach.
Xbox or PlayStation? This might be answered on your son's behalf.
The thing that I've most recently played would be Xbox.
Dishes or laundry?
Well, laundry, because you don't have to do much. You just stick it in there and it does it for you.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Homemade or takeout?
Homemade. Love homemade food.
And finally, when you get an opportunity to unwind, are you a club girl or a house party?
House party. Nothing like a good old school house party with your friends. So,
Tamika, you are now off the hot seat.
Okay, thank you. That wasn't too bad.
Well, let's just start off with the basics for our listeners out there. Where exactly did you grow up?
I was born in Detroit, actually. I lived there until I was about 10 and then moved to Southfield, which is one of the northern suburbs, just across 8 Mile for those that know the area. And I went to middle school, well, 1 year of elementary and then middle and high school in Southfield. And people think that, and of course it is, that Detroit is a predominantly Black city, and it is. But many people also don't know that it has a lot of other dimensions of diversity, as the biggest Middle Eastern population outside of the Middle East, the big Polish population, big Jewish population, Asian, Indian. So I really grew up with people from all backgrounds, races, religions, and they were just my friends. And so it was really a rich upbringing, one that I have so many fond memories of. And, you know, grew up hearing about Detroit in its heyday from all of my family, but, you know, also just had, I would say, a really great childhood and experience. So I ride for the D. That's my hometown, without a doubt.
Shout out to 8 Mile. But as I mentioned at the top, you attended Michigan University, mm-hmm. not Michigan State. Huge difference for our listeners out there.
That's right.
But any disappointment with the Wolverines just falling short of the Final Four?
Of course. I mean, I wanted them to go all the way. I think they definitely had the talent to go all the way. Reality is they just didn't play well. I mean, you know, they couldn't buy a basket down the stretch. They were behind for most of the game. It came back, you know, with what, 15 to go in the second half, but ultimately missed so many shots at critical moments. And when you think about this, is to me how you know how talented they are. When you think about the fact that I think their two biggest players were like 1 for 7 or 1 for 10, they still almost won the game. You know, like literally it came down to the final shot. So to me, that just shows if we had just been able to sink a couple of those down the stretch, it would have been a different result. But I was actually at Michigan when the Fab Five and Juwan were there. Ooh, he's really a great guy. And in addition to the school, I was rooting for him as an individual, as a coach, as a leader. And but I know they'll be back. I like I said, there's a meme that I use that says, I'm not a fan, I'm a Wolverine. And that's really how I feel, which is why I had to correct you on the former Wolverine part.
Tamika, as you give your summary, it's like I can visualize you on the sofa in your jersey or your shirt with your foam finger, totally into the game, a true Wolverine.
Absolutely.
Well, obviously you're a sports fan, but did you play any sports growing up?
I did. I was a big tomboy growing up and just loved all sports. In fact, I remember for my 10th birthday, when my dad asked me, what do you want for your birthday? I said, a football. He and I watched football growing up. And I think that's one of the things that attracted me to Michigan is I have been a huge sports fan, and Michigan typically is good in any number of sports, male and female. So I actually played volleyball at one point. I played softball, but probably the sport that I, the two that I loved and did the most was running track and being a cheerleader.
Tamika, did you also do sports in college?
I did not. No, when I thought about kind of trying. So I did cheerleading all 4 years of high school and thought about trying out. But then I decided, let me just focus on academics. I'm first generation college student. And, you know, Michigan is not an easy school. And when I was there, I knew that I wanted to go into the business school. And when I was there, you had to do like the first 2 years in the liberal arts program and then apply to the business school. So there was no guarantee you would even get in. So I just decided to kind of focus and buckle down the first 2 years to make sure that I had a better chance to get in. Then, I mean, I worked, but I didn't end up playing any sports.
Well, you mentioned your focus in business. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the end game and kind of back into it. You're very well known as a diversity, equity, and inclusion expert and executive, not only here in North America, but throughout the globe. But I don't think you woke up at 10 and said, I'm going to be a DE&I expert. So walk us through your career space and talk to it from the perspective of someone who may be interested in this career path. When did this start for you? Kind of take us through your journey.
Yeah, I think it honestly started when I arrived at Michigan. So you heard about my upbringing, and that was very diverse, certainly largely African-American, but also I was just exposed to many other different parts of diversity. And that was not the case when I got to Michigan, as is the case with many predominantly white institutions. It's a big place, 40,000 students, but it's only 4% Black, right? So I went from an environment that was predominantly Black to one that was clearly where I was in the minority. And so I think even when I reflect on my time at Michigan, it didn't feel right to me. I was like, where is all the diversity? And I know there are amazing, talented, smart people from all these different backgrounds that I grew up with. And how do we change that? And so even when I reflect on organizations I was involved in at Michigan, I was, you know, with the Black Business Students Association and the women's groups. My sophomore year, I actually helped create a multicultural leadership conference with the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs to just help, I would say, help develop and inspire and connect students from underprivileged and underrepresented backgrounds so that they could really be set up for success at Michigan. Because once again, as I said, I'm first generation. I didn't really have anybody to help me understand how to navigate such a large institution. And I found that there were many people in that same position. So I even think about then advocating for that space. And then when I majored in accounting, and I'll tell you how I came up with that even. I had always loved math. It was my favorite subject. I was really good at it. Both of my parents were entrepreneurs. My mom owned a daycare center in Detroit. My dad owned a construction company. And so I put business and math together and I got accounting. I mean, I really didn't have any other way to figure out what I wanted to do. But it ended up being an amazing foundation for me because it brought together all of the aspects of business plus the quantitative part of me that is really important. So I started my career off at Deloitte. Back then it was called Deloitte & Touche, one of the back then big five accounting firms. And I had that same experience again, where you're entering a profession where there was clearly a very large majority, a very male and very white, to be honest. And so even as I was at Deloitte for 10 years, I started out doing auditing. I then got into management consulting. And in all cases, I was advocating for, you know, what schools are we going to in terms of recruiting? And even when we go to those schools, are we connecting with the student organizations that are focused on different communities? Or are we just showing up and doing the same thing we've always done? I'm a big believer that you keep doing what you've been doing, you'll keep getting what you've been getting. So how are we going to do things differently? And really elevating, even once people started working, how are we connecting people? How are we setting them up for success, et cetera? So
Tamika, before we go too far down this path, though, I want to take our listeners through. You settled on accounting in college. Did you do internships and did those connect to your accounting focus?
They did. So back to helping people and setting them up for success, I was a part of En-ROADS when I was in college. I didn't join straight out of high school like some people were able to, but I did join when I was in college. And actually my first, my original major at Michigan was finance. And I come up with that same thing from what you heard before. But my internship actually taught me that's not what I wanted to do. So I ended up working in a finance department at Ford Motor Company, which was my original En-ROADS sponsoring company. And I just didn't find the work as exciting and as, I would say, broad based. And I mean, at that point, I didn't know if it was because of my internship or the body of work or subject matter in general. But I then did a lot of shadowing and I talked to a lot of people who worked in finance. And I said, tell me about the different types of careers in finance. And in addition to obviously the corporate part of finance, there's all the investment banking and, you know, private equity and venture capital. And honestly, none of those things really appealed to me. And so that's when I said, how can I maintain this quantitative focus, not lose a lot of credits because I still wanted to graduate on time. And so that's when I pivoted into accounting. So when I pivoted and switched my major to accounting, my second internship was with Deloitte. And Deloitte ended up being the company that I joined after graduation. So I am a huge fan of internships in terms of a number of things. I think it helps you, obviously it gives you a tremendous experience in different companies. So you can get a sense of not only what different companies are like in corporate America, but the work itself. And like I said, I think it's just important to know what you enjoy as it is to know what you don't enjoy. And I think sometimes internships can show you both of those things and really help guide you in terms of if you need to make any course corrections like I did, or to affirm and say, yeah, this is definitely what I want to do when I graduate. So big fan of internships and organizations like En-ROADS, MLT, Management Leadership for Tomorrow, and others who really have opened the door in helping more underrepresented individuals get their foot in the door into those kinds of opportunities.
Thank you for that perspective. I appreciate that. Now take us back to Deloitte, 10 years management consultant. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm at Deloitte. I've gone through accounting. I'm now doing management consulting. And I get a call one day out of the blue from the head of HR. And they ask me if I want to be the head of D&I for North and South America. I was completely at a loss. I had no HR background. I wasn't even doing human capital consulting. I was doing strategy and operations consulting. So everything from mergers and acquisitions to supply chain work, to process improvement. So it wasn't even like I was focused on kind of the more HR focused parts of consulting. But I say that people see things in you, sometimes you don't see yourself. And so they just saw, you heard me say before, this passion that I had, how I was always elevating these issues and advocating for marginalized and underrepresented groups. And they also knew I had a really solid reputation at that point, was a high performer. And they said, you understand the business and you know how things work and you can really be a bridge between what is largely viewed as kind of HR work and really helping our business leaders understand their role and helping them make the connection. So I thought it was a tremendous vote of confidence. I, of course, negotiated that if I didn't like it, I could go back to client service, which they said yes. But I've been doing this work ever since, and that was just about 20 years ago. So I'm so grateful and thankful that that individuals did see, you know, this passion that I had and that I could turn this passion into purpose, because I feel like it's not just my passion, but my purpose too.
Yeah, but Tamika, let's also not overlook the confidence that you had in yourself, or at least your willingness to be open to the possibility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some advice embedded in there, especially for early professionals to, you know, take opportunities, even if it doesn't look like what mm-hmm. you were planning on, it could be that bridge or that stepping stone to the ultimate goal.
You're absolutely right. In fact, when I talk to young people and I give advice, that's one of my top three pieces of advice is have a plan. We all should have a plan of how we want our lives to unfold, and because in the absence of that, you'll just go in any direction. So have a plan, but be open, because I honestly don't know anyone, not one of my peers, friends, or people I've met along the way whose careers unfolded exactly how they had mapped it out or planned it out. And in most cases, the pivots and the changes that people have made them better, have allowed them to grow and to learn and to get opportunities they wouldn't have originally had or honestly didn't even know existed based upon their original plan. So like I said, have a plan, but always be open and be open in that you're still going to make, I would say, a calculated decision. Understand the pros and cons, talk to people, get advice and input. But at the end of the day, trust that you can make pivots and changes and that they will be the better. You'll be the better for it, that they will really help develop you.
So Tamika, you took on this leadership role with the company that you joined out of college and actually you interned with for, it sounds like, one summer while you were in college. And then you went on to lead DE&I efforts at some very impressive organizations. But you finally said, or maybe you returned to the roots of your parents, the entrepreneur bug bit you. And then you said, I can do this on my own. I can bring value to clients after having this training and getting the expertise and some corporate backgrounds. So maybe talk us through the transition from corporate to entrepreneur and how you're continuing to push the agenda in the DE&I space.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Because I had parents that were entrepreneurs, the concept wasn't foreign to me. I had always said, I think growing up, we look at our parents as role models. So I always said, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur one day. Had no idea when or in what capacity. When after I was at Deloitte, I led DEI at Target as well. And after Target is when I first started my firm. And it was a combination of a couple of things. And a lot of it is work-life balance related. When I was at Deloitte, one of the things that we worked on and a term that we coined was off-ramps and on-ramps, because we were noticing that women were not making it to the partnership ranks. They were kind of dropping out at the senior manager level. And largely because of work-life balance issues, they were getting married, they were having kids, and it was really difficult to juggle it all. And so that's when we came up with this concept of how can we give women or anyone an off-ramp to take those breaks in their lives and then really make it easy from an on-ramp perspective to get plugged back in. So I took an off-ramp is really what happened. I got married. I had a son and I'm now divorced. But at the time, my husband and I, he also had a pretty high-powered business career and still does. And so as we thought through how we wanted to raise our family and the kind of environment we wanted, he also had been an entrepreneur. And so it just seemed really natural for me to say, okay, this might be the time for me to do something I've always wanted to do. And to your point, I had had some great experiences up until that point, had a really great network, and I decided to make the transition and started my own firm. And there are certainly pros and cons to both. You know, I've done kind of two stints in corporate America, two stints as an entrepreneur. I value and appreciate them both. And I think as people, and particularly as women, that we should give ourselves permission to do what works for our lives at any point in time. And, you know, I think we're seeing now that there is this huge increase of women starting businesses, and particularly women of color. Black women, I think, are the fastest growing segment of new businesses being started. And we could probably wax poetic for a long time about why that is. I think part of it is because of DEI challenges that underrepresented groups face in corporate America. But I think it's also because after we get some experience under our belt, we say, you know what, we can do this and we can do it better, and we can really serve a need that is out there. And I love it when I see women going for it.
So Tamika, specifically to your business, what are some of the current hot topics or areas of focus in the DE&I space that you're huddling with your clients about?
I would say one of the big ones right now is women in the workforce. Due to COVID and the pandemic, we are seeing women leave the workforce at an alarming rate, largely for, as we just were talking, work-life balance issues. And I can certainly relate to this personally. I have a 10-year-old son. He's been doing virtual schooling at home for over a year now, and it is very difficult to navigate my own Zoom calls and meetings and work that I need to do with him and his studies as well. And so I just have one child. There are many that have multiple children. They may have parents that they're dealing with. Long story short is that women are typically the caregivers and families. And so the studies are showing they're leaving at an alarming rate. So a lot of my clients are thinking through two things. One, how do we retain the women that we have? So really trying to think through what kind of support do they need? How do we provide that support? Everything from childcare to mental health, et cetera. And then also, how do we attract some of the women who have left to come back once we do have vaccines and things get back to certainly not normal? We'll never go back to the way we were. But how do we think about reattracting women? And I think this whole focus on hybrid work arrangements, flexibility, letting people tell you what they need. And then as organizations, you adapting to it is a big one. The second thing I would say that we're seeing certainly is after the murders of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, DEI in general as a topic is front and center for many organizations in ways that it's never been. My peers and I who do this work, we talk every day about there's so much work, more than enough to go around. And specifically the focus on race, which is something that I'll be honest, pre that period of time, was a very uncomfortable topic for most organizations and leaders, and one that they did not naturally lean into. It was always like pulling teeth to get them to talk about racial issues in a really transparent way. That has changed. And so I think many organizations, we also see the rise of discrimination and violence against the Asian community. So there are all these racial things that are coming to a head. Every racial and ethnic group that's underrepresented, Native American, Latinx, have all had disproportionate impacts over this last year. And so that, I would say, the racial dynamics have really taken center stage.
And I laugh as you talk about the work-life balance as I'm here balancing my son on my knee. But from an early age, you were really in tune with the imbalance of the diversity or lack of diversity in the world. And reading over your resume, your vast experience, it gives you a unique perspective, especially as it relates to social justice issues in sports. The NBA has probably been the most active, but what are your thoughts about the way athletes and sport leagues have started to create real change in the space of equality?
I mean, you heard me say I'm a huge sports fan. And I think, you know, what I used to work at Nike, and Nike talks about, you know, sports having the power to change the world. I've also done some work with some youth sport for development programs like Glorious USA. And Nelson Mandela has a quote also that talks about, you know, really that sports is one of the things that brings people together across difference and across background. And it has really a unifying aspect to it. And so I have been encouraged to see, you know, whether it's NASCAR or the NFL doing some things that they've never done before, the Major League Baseball, MLB, you know, really starting to lean into this. And like you said, the NBA, I think for sure has been the leader in this space, but you even see it happening with, race car driving, which is typically, you know, not been one that talked about these issues at all. And you have, you know, so many of these athletes that are really stepping into the space. So I'm encouraged. I think there definitely is a platform there. And it's one of the reasons you heard me say I picked LeBron earlier is that I applaud people who are willing to stand up for what's right. You know, the Colin Kaepernicks of the world, the LeBrons, you know, Serena is a huge advocate for women athletes and women's issues in general. And so I think people listen, and sports has a really unique place and a role to play in helping to drive change, because they do have a platform that really, I would say, gets the attention of people from all walks of life.
Tamika, you're a mentor to many women, especially women of color, and we appreciate you for that. Mm-hmm. And you support many causes that drive for gender equality. What advice do you give to women now? And it may be different than advice than you gave 10 years ago. But when you're talking to someone who's saying, I want to do my best job at work-life integration, how do you help them with that?
I would say a couple pieces of advice. First is I have this equation I use all the time that I think helps you on the work side. And that is performance plus relationships equals opportunity, or PRO is what I call it. And it has been the equation that truly has led to where I am today in terms of, you know, my parents raising me to have a focus on excellence and whatever I did to do it to the best of my ability. And I think the reality is you can't just be good. You've got to be great. So this focus on excellence and performance, I think, is really table stakes for women, for everyone. But I think it's particularly acute for underrepresented groups, for women who often are not measured in the same way, if we're really candid about it. And so we don't have a choice except to really go above and beyond. So that's part of it. But then the second is building relationships and build relationships across difference. So, you know, when I think about some of my biggest mentors, they have been white men. They've been people who, you know, didn't grow up in a diverse environment, but that I really went out of my way to get to know. So that the importance of building authentic relationships throughout your career is really invaluable, because when I think about whether it's the phone call out of the blue I got to do D&I work at Deloitte, or the phone call I got out of the blue to come to Target or to Mercedes or to Nike for that matter, or some of the VC work that I'm doing now, it all has come from relationships that I had. And so I think if you can do those two, opportunities will come to you that you didn't even know existed. And it really helps build a well-rounded view. You can't just have your head down and work. You also have to invest from a human capital perspective. And then on the work-life balance part, I alluded to that a little bit earlier, that I think we need to be willing to be innovative and creative about our lives and create the life that we want. One of my friends has a book called, you know, Design Your Life. And I think that's really how I view it. It's just as we would design, you know, the furniture in our homes or whatever. Let's do the same thing for our lives. So if there's something that you want, how do you go about designing a path that will allow you to do that? I think once again, that comes from the performance and the relationships, because then you're able to say, hey, I need a special arrangement, or I need more flexibility here. I have friends who've been, well before COVID, were working out of the office 3 days a week because they just went to their manager and said, hey, this is what I need and why. And then they were able to show that they could make it work. So I think we have to lean in. We have to be clear about what it is that we want and not be afraid to speak up and say what it is that we need to be successful. And organizations that truly understand our value and worth will try to adapt to that. And those that don't, I think that's a message we need to know too, so that we can make the choices that are best for us.
Reconnecting to your point about relationships across difference, I would even build upon that to say sponsorship across mm-hmm. difference. Mm-hmm. Mentorship is the idea of who's helping you develop your career. Sponsorship, mm-hmm. as you know, Tamika, is mm-hmm. who's talking about you when you're not in the room, talking about right. you in a great way when you're not in the room,
right.
who's presenting
right.
you with opportunities. Yeah. And I think we've both been blessed that we've had those sponsors who didn't look like us. Mm-hmm. And we've had some that did.
They did, yeah.
But the thought comes to my mind that there's still a need for more women supporting women. And there still seems to be a struggle with women leaning into each other and yes. advocating for each other. What are your thoughts in that space about women supporting women, and how do we become better?
No, you're right. I mean, I think it's getting better. I've seen it get better over the course of my career. And I think, I mean, there's this concept, I've been doing this work long enough that I love human psychology. I almost minored in psychology in college, because just understanding how the human mind works and why we do what we do to me is fascinating, but also really telling in terms of why the world is the way it is. And there's this concept of stereotype threat, where you just start to embody the characteristics that or stereotypes that others have of you. And I think, unfortunately, that happens to women sometimes, that we fall into that trap of, being meager or meek or acting a certain way. And we also know that we are evaluated differently. And so there's this fear. There's also this concept called covering, where you don't really kind of show who you are or do the things that you would naturally do. And a lot of women cover, and that they don't speak out for women or women's issues because they're afraid of the implications for them, or they're afraid of how it will impact their career, or will they become known as, oh, she's the one that always talks about women's issues. But I think one of the things that we have to do, you know, I go back to the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. We know that that doesn't work. There is room at the table for more than one of us. And we all should be reaching back. It should be a natural part that once we get entrance into a new table or a new room, that we're reaching back and equipping someone to come behind us, so that we may be the first, but we should never be the only. And so I would say that I see it getting better. I think also it's a bit of a generational shift happening as well. I think many women who have been in the workforce for a long time, they have been, quote unquote, successful emulating male tendencies and male behaviors. And now I think we're showing that you can be successful as a woman, and that you should be fine and really confident leaning into that space. So I would just say authenticity for me is absolutely critical and key. As a Black woman, I bring that to every situation. And so I'm going to talk about women's issues. I'm going to talk about Black issues, but I'm also going to talk about equity for everyone, because, you know, the reality is that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so we all have to have that mindset that none of us can be successful unless all of us have the opportunity to be successful.
And I know, Tamika, based on your experience, a lot of what you share, you filter through a corporate lens. Mm-hmm. But now tapping back into your passion for sports, you and I had a great opportunity to reconnect on a panel for International Women's Day, which was supported by the Houston Rockets. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about women in sports? What's the next step for them? How do they drive more change in their industry and open up more opportunities for them even post-career?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's huge opportunity here. And I would say it goes back to many of those corporate lessons too, is speaking up and leaning into the space. I was really happy to see, not to see the difference that was made during the NCAA tournament between men and women, but the women being bold enough to video it and to post it and to say this isn't right and to stand in their truth, you know, to bring awareness to these issues. And then obviously the entire world sees how ridiculous that is. And that's what we have to do. We've got to shine a light on the inequities if we're ever going to address them. So I love the way that we see more and more female athletes. We see the women's soccer team, you know, coming out and saying, we've won how many games? The men can't even make it to the Olympics. We've won how many, and we're still making a fraction of what they make. And so I think elevating these issues, we have to talk about it. Carla Harris is an amazing leader, happens to be a Black woman who works at Morgan Stanley and is an executive there and has worked in Wall Street for 30 years. And she says, call the thing a thing. Mm-hmm. So that's my advice, is for female athletes, call the thing a thing and call it out. But then the second thing is that, and this is where I say not just in athletics, but in the corporate space, we need allies. Men have to be allies in this space for women athletes. So I think we saw that. We saw the Steph Currys and others reacting and saying, oh my goodness, this is absolutely ridiculous, and advocating for a lot of these issues too. And so whether it's the court or the boardroom, I think that speaking up and being clear about inequities when we see them. And then secondly, having allies lean into this space as well, because the reality is that we need people from all backgrounds, both the majority and those in the minority, to be able to truly affect change.
And don't overthink allyship. Tamika, give us some tangible actions. What does it mean to show up as an ally?
I say ally is actually a verb and not a noun. I think people look at it as a noun and say, I'm an ally. But allyship requires action. And so there's this continuum. Jennifer Brown from Jennifer Brown Consulting, who's also a really great DEI leader, she talks about the journey from being unaware to aware to active to advocate. And that is the walk that we all need to take. And that, and when you're in that active and advocate space, that's when you're an ally, not when you're oblivious to what's going on, or even when you're aware, but not leaning in and making a difference and speaking up. So when we talk about being active and being an advocate, it's speaking up when you see something that's not right. It's joining committees to help drive change in your company or your organization. It is bringing attention to issues that you know are important in your community or in as it relates to customers, whatever that issue is. It is doing your own work so that you are aware of issues. And so being really driving your self-awareness, reading, listening to podcasts, talking to people. You can't rely on others to educate you. You've got to start by educating yourself. So all of those are behaviors and actions that allies need to take. And really, you can't appoint yourself an ally. You need to work to earn that title.
Yeah. And speaking of allies, in particular, when it comes to women, and I think the biggest shift that we see is I'm noticing more outspoken support from men as we talk about the NCAA with Steph Curry. And then also with the WNBA, we've seen the change there. And I think a huge difference in that league has been from the support of the NBA players. So we need to keep that going. What's the best advice you've ever received?
One of my mentors who eventually became a sponsor at Target, and I use this not just in my professional life, but in my personal life. He told me, meet people where they are and bring them where you want them to be. And I think so much in life, we kind of put a stake in the ground in terms of where we are. And we don't necessarily, like I said, move to meet the person where they are in whatever it is, in a relationship and, you know, with our kids, with our parents, certainly in professional capacities. And so I think the more that we can do that, when we meet people where they are, what it does is it helps drive empathy. Empathy means I'm actually putting myself in your shoes. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we will always change our point of view. But if we lean into meeting people where they are and showing more empathy, we can at least better understand where someone is coming from, why they have a point of view. And we also can understand how they form that point of view to be better equipped to try to bring them along and to learn new things and be open to different perspectives. But if we never take the time to understand, that'll never happen. So I would say that's what I really have taken on as one of my success factors in life, is to approach situations like that in terms of meeting people where they are and then trying to bring them where I want them to be.
And I've seen you in action, Tamika, meeting people where they are, reaching back and helping people to climb to get to the next level. Another thing there that I really admire about you is that you do live in the moment. You live in the present. You have a great appreciation for the present being a gift. But if I were to ask you if you could go back in time and give a younger Tamika advice, what age would you go back to, or what season would you go back to? And what's that seed of advice you would plant at that time?
Probably go back to college. And I, you know, and I would say, can I say undergrad and grad? Because I think about both. And it's now we know, because we're working individuals. I always laugh about if I knew then what I know now, I would have taken more time to smell the roses, to do different things, to meet even more people, to, you know, take some of the study abroad opportunities that maybe had come my way. Because the reality is when you are in school, it's like a bit of a social experiment, and you have the freedom and the opportunity to do a lot of things that don't necessarily come your way when you're quote unquote in the real world. So I would say go back, take advantage of more, do more different things, travel more, which I love to travel now, but I think I would definitely do a study abroad. And in grad school, I actually did the 1-year MBA program because I had an undergraduate business degree. I think I would do the 2-year program if I could go back to just deepen my understanding, deepen my knowledge, build more relationships, and just take that breather, like you said, to enjoy the here and now. I was kind of rushing to get back to work. And now I mean, like, okay, now I'm looking for the next break, which I'm not sure what that'll be, but but I would just say to enjoy the moment more. That's something that I have learned to do over time, not necessarily something I was good at back in those days.
And it's so easy to say that from a point of reflection. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to grasp that concept when you're striving for that next achievement, when you're mm-hmm. in that moment. So thank mm-hmm. you for that. So Tamika, what's next for you?
Well, a couple of new things. One thing is that I'm working on a book, a DEI book. It's called Walk the Talk.
Walk the Talk.
And it is about a lot of the things we've been discussing. You know, I've been doing this work for 20 years now. And I think I don't know any company that is satisfied with their progress. And I think as a society, we can say we really could be doing better than we are. And so the book is really some really guiding principles and paradigm shifts that need to take place in the DEI space for us to really achieve the change that organizations say they want. It goes back to that concept of insanity and doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. If we want different results, we've got to take a different approach. So the book talks about that. And then the second thing is I am really involved at Michigan at my alma mater and talking. I'm on their Dean's Council for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. I am on the Alumni Board of Governors there and really helping them think through their DEI strategies and how and what important role colleges and universities play in this space, given that they are training and equipping and developing the future set of business and society's leaders. How can we infuse a lot of this knowledge and understanding at an earlier age? Because when I am helping leaders and companies, I'm either teaching them one, topics that they've never learned before, or two, I'm actually telling them to unlearn inequitable behaviors. And so if we can get to leaders to be early on as they're going through college, even in grad school, and help them understand some of these fundamental concepts about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, I think that will also be a pivot and a paradigm shift in how we seed inclusive leadership throughout society and in business.
So, Tamika, we've had a number of guests on the podcast that love their alma mater. You are definitely in the top percentile of that. But I love it from the perspective that you're not just showing your love and appreciation from a distance. You're rolling up your sleeves and you're getting involved. And I think if you could play on the basketball teams and the football teams, you would sign up to do that as well. The other point I'd like to make is Drew and I will definitely be reading your book. Really excited for that. And hopefully you'll come and discuss that with us.
I would love to.
On the podcast once you get that going. We'd love to have a roundtable discussion about your insights and your expertise that you bring forth in the book.
Love it. Well, thank you. This has been an amazing experience. Just so glad we got to reconnect and chat and talk about these things. And I always tell people that change is not easy and it requires everybody. We really need all hands on deck, whether it's in sports, in life, business, or personal. We all have a role to play in making this world a better place, a more equitable place. And the reality is the road that we've been going down is not sustainable. And the demographics clearly are changing no matter what we do. So the best thing that we can do is find a way to not just peacefully coexist, but to thrive together. And that really means leaning into some uncomfortable truths and some tough work. But if we do the work as people and as a society on an individual, organizational, and structural level, we can be the change that we want to see.
There's no other way to say it, and I'm going to summarize it, but the path that we're on is not sustainable. Great point, Tamika. Thank you.
Love it. Well, Tamika, we appreciate your time today, but Yvonne and I have a fascination for music. So one thing we like to do before we close out the show is, what is your playlist when you're getting into the zone?
So if I'm working out, I love to work out. Pre-COVID, I was a bit of a gym rat and I went to this hip hop dance class. So it's hip hop is my music to work out. So whether it's dancing or lifting weights, I have a Peloton now in my basement, it's the hip hop classes are the ones that get me going and definitely get me to get a PR. And so, you heard me say multiple times, I'm old school. So that old school hip hop, you know, that is really what, I mean, it's like, whoo, it could really get me going. So that would be it without a doubt.
You'll have to show us some of your dance moves one day.
On the book tour.
Yes, I love it. Awesome. That's how I come out on stage, right?
Yeah, that would definitely attract attention. Well, Tamika, this has been so powerful. We know that you are very busy and we're just thankful for your time, forward to having you back on. And in the meantime, there's probably going to be a lot of opportunities for collaboration in this DE&I space. So we will stay connected with you.
Sounds good. Thanks again for the opportunity. I hope you and all of your listeners take care and stay safe out here. And just like I said, don't just exist, but let's get out here and thrive.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Tamika Curry Smith.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths, and always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com and follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, Train Harder.